Moncrief on News Talk.
As we gear up for the Eurovision next week, this year marks the 50th anniversary of ABBA's famous 1974 win with Waterloo. Joining me now, I'm delighted to say, is Giles Martin, author of the new book, My My ABBA Through the Ages. Giles, hello, sir.
Hi, hello. I wish I was Giles Martin, because that's George Martin's son. And I'm Giles Smith.
But, my apologies. Good Lord, Giles Smith. Can we clarify that?
I don't want anyone to think they're talking to the son of the Beatles producer here. I can't walk in his shoes.
No, I spoke to Giles Martin once, actually. Maybe that's what put it into my head. So I was thinking all things musical, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. No, a great guy, Giles Martin.
Indeed, but we're here to talk about you being Giles Smith, just to clarify that again, author of My ABBA Through the Ages. And the reason why I'm so keen to get your name right is because anyone who writes a book, and I've no doubt you're a wonderful journalist, but anyone who writes a book who starts with fandom is a friend of mine. So I think it's fair to say, like, I know this is a study of ABBA, but it's very much about your complicated love of them. Is that right?
That's absolutely right. I think we tend to forget now they're so popular these days that they've been through great waves of popularity and unpopularity, ABBA. It was very difficult to like them in the 70s. They were not cool. They were not the kind of thing, especially if you were a teenager, they were not the kind of thing a teenager should be listening to at all. When punk and new wave come along, and if you're still listening to ABBA at that point, you've got a real problem.
And to the point, sorry to interrupt you, Giles, you were hiding the spines of your cassettes so your classmates couldn't see that you were listening to ABBA, right? And I've done something similar I'll tell you about.
Yeah, no, I had the 1975 album, which was called ABBA, and it's got Mamma Mia and it's got SOS on it. It is basically the first album after Waterloo, after the fuss of Waterloo. Mm. And I had that on pre-recorded cassette. And I used to keep all my cassettes in one of those Perspex boxes with all the spines up. But I used to put that one spine down just because then people wouldn't know it was there. I mean, that's the sort of level of embarrassment that one felt as a self-conscious teenager about them. It would be unthinkable now to the people going to the ABBA Void show in London and just sort of openly celebrating them, and everyone realizes how great they are and are quite happy to own up to it. But yeah, they were an embarrassment for a sizable time. And during the 80s and the 90s, practically disappeared off the radar. That's also hard to remember.
Yeah, and you see, like, the thing about them is, it's funny, I was watching, there's a new Jon Bon Jovi documentary out on Disney at the moment, and I'm enjoying it, but it's very much, you know, there are these kids in New Jersey, then epic fame, then they fall apart and blah, 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 then it's all happy ho and they're trying to do a 40th tour and blah, blah, blah. But the ABBA story is very unique in rock terms. Like, they win the Eurovision. It doesn't quite happen then for a while. Then they're intergalactic. Then they become an embarrassment. Then they're brought back to a whole new generation of fans through movies and musicals. And now they're avatars. Like, it's a unique rock pop story, I think, not to spoil your book or anything.
No, I that's absolutely right. I mean, I think the only thing, it bears comparison with the Beatles to a certain extent, in that the Beatles had this 8 years of activity, basically. ABBA had about 8 years of activity from 74 to 82 when they stopped. And then that was it. And they never came back. And in both those cases, I think they did us an enormous favor by not coming back, because it left us with the memory of them as they were. Mm. And, you know, ABBA haven't done that thing. They've spent 40 years basically not existing.
Yeah.
Just sitting at home.
Yeah.
And they haven't been constantly going out every year and doing the greatest hits tour, mm-hmm. and bringing the key down a little bit every year so they could still reach it. You know, all those things that bands have to do to keep themselves alive, ABBA haven't done at all. Mm. And we've been left alone with our memories of them, which are very pure, and then simply with the songs. And it's like the songs have been out there fighting for them all this while. So it's a very pure thing, that. Well, they've just sat at home doing nothing.
The thing is, right, I was probably one of those kids who, you know, 18 to, well, up to my 30s, I thought ABBA were crap. I thought it was kids' music. I thought they were a notch above the Muppets, which is a terrible thing to say. And I feel like I should apologize to you for saying that. And now,
I don't think so.
I think the songs are great. So what was it? Were we just wrong, or was it because punk came along?
I don't think, no, there's no being wrong, of course. Mm. And it's very true that ABBA, when they were first popular, they were mostly popular with little kids and with those kids' parents. And there was no middle ground for them, really. It was either youngsters or older people. And I think what happens then is that as you get older yourself, the songs sort of change in your head and they mean different things to you. So when you hear Dancing Queen, and you're actually 17, like the subject of the song, or the subject of the fantasy in the song, this 17-year-old. That means a very different thing to you to when you hear it and you're in your 30s. And again, when you're in your 40s, it's like, I think you just come back to the songs with a completely different feeling about them as you grow older.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's not that you're wrong to dislike them when you're a kid, and certainly not when you're a teenager. I certainly went through that. They seemed very open to satire when I was 18. And if you, I think, not the 9 o'clock news, the BBC satire, when I was in the sixth form, that was a huge thing. And they did this amazing spoof of ABBA. They did Super Trooper, but the song was called Super Duper. And they did the whole spoof ABBA thing. And they sent them up so high, you just, when you watched it, you couldn't imagine ABBA ever coming back from that.
Yeah.
And I can remember really enjoying that and thinking, yeah, well, that's absolutely right. Very disloyal of me, given that I'd been, you know, listening to the music up to that point.
You were a Judas. You denied them.
Absolutely a Judas. I denied them. But then I got older, and now, you know, I went to see the Void show in London, which is an extraordinary thing, and found it really, really emotional. And part of that is, I think it's emotional because it's about the passing of time, and it's about getting older yourself and realizing that they've got older and the music's got older.
Yeah.
But it's still around.
I want to ask you about that show, but I just want to tell you, and people who've heard me on this station are bored me saying this, but the first gig I ever went to was a Billy Joel concert. I was 14. My brother took me to see him in Wembley Arena. And I've been a massive fan ever since. And the music that you gets you in your teenage years stays with you all your life. But he was an embarrassment for a long time. Now, I thought he was always cool and that, and people are saying he's more cool now than he was. But I share your pain of having to hide your CDs. I remember being on a bus with a cassette player, taking out River of Dreams and hiding it in my pocket and trying to replace it with something else like the Red Hot Chili Peppers or something like that. So I was a Judas too, Giles, I'm sorry to say.
Sure. Well, now I understand it, particularly frustrating in relation to Billy Joel, because he clearly is a genius, and we
Thank
can
you.
See that from here. And you know,
we can continue with this interview, which is great news.
Yeah, the songwriting bears comparison with Dylan, I would say. I mean, I think he's that good, but it's very hard. He's still, as you say, crawling out from under that middle of the road, schlocky reputation.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, listen, I want to get up to the present day. So this show, Voyager, you know, there was people saying this is the end of the world. The center cannot hold. We're going to see avatars of bands in stadiums and stuff like this. This is terrible. This is awful. But from what I gather, no, I didn't go to it, but fans like yourself were completely blown away by it. In the little time we have left, just give us a sense of what you actually see when you go to that show and why it was actually so good as you see it.
Okay, well, you're absolutely right. It seems like a grim prospect. They're not holograms. It's not like anything you've seen before. You're actually watching a film, but it's an incredibly well-realized film, so it looks three-dimensional. And you can't believe that the thing that you're looking at is not a stage with actual fully rounded human beings on it. Yeah. So that's going on, and it's kind of amazing. And then it's very beautifully staged. I mean, the lighting, sitting in this arena, it's very oddly, something happens and it becomes an emotional experience, even though they're not there. It's bizarre, and again, it's a slightly weedy thing to say, but you have to see it to believe it. You have to kind of go to really appreciate just how it works on you.
Yeah.
But it is extraordinary. And I don't think you have to be a fan either. I think it just is an extraordinary spectacle.
Yeah, yeah. And tell me this, the book, you see, as I say, I love books based on fandom, and I know you've traced them and all, but are people responding to the book in that fandom way, if you know what I mean?
I think so. I really hope so. I mean, it's not really, it's not necessarily for the hardcore fan. It's just for, I think all of us have had this music in our heads. They've been in our lives for 50 years. And it's just kind of asking, well, why? How come? Why are they still here? How has it survived? That's the essence of it.
Yeah. And listen, we didn't even kind of get into the band and Agnieszka and all those various things and Benny O, but quick urban myth, and you're probably tired answering this, but did the Sex Pistols base Anarchy in the UK on SOS?
Yep. Glenn Matlock definitely took the idea for the guitar riff from a bit of riffing that goes on in the middle of SOS. And you can hear it. It's in there. It's a two note thing at the end of the chorus, and he did take it, and that's how it happened.
Wow! And were they paid in vegetables by a Polish government back in the 70s?
That seems to have been a myth. Peas, I think it was, wasn't it? Wagon loads of peas were meant to have set off from Poland to Sweden in exchange for an ABBA appearance, but that appears to have been a myth.
Apocryphal. Very good. Well, I have been talking to a man called Giles Smith, and I want to clarify that. Giles Smith, author
of... Who wishes he was Giles Martin.
Don't we all? Author of the wonderful sounding My My ABBA Through the Ages. Giles, lovely to talk to you.
And to you. Thanks a lot, John. Thank you.
I'll just finish with a text. I grew up in the 70s and 80s. My parents loved ABBA, and me and my siblings loved ABBA, and my kids love ABBA. They're great in any era. That's from Pat. I'm doing that with my children with Billy Joel, but they claim they hate him now. So I'm not sure if that works.
Moncrief, weekdays at 2 p.m. on News Talk.